With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Championship Roundtable. I'm your host, Jake Jackman, and you can reach the show by emailing us at championshiproundtable@gmail.com.
Hello, my name is Louis Shackshaft. I represent Sheffield Wednesday on the podcast and write for Shoot Football, also representing Sheffield Wednesday. You can catch me on Twitter. It's just my name, at Louis Shackshaft.
Hi, I'm Andy Buckley-Taylor, representing Derby County on the podcast. I write a blog for various Derbyshire local newspapers, and you can find me on Twitter at BookTaylor64.
Thanks so much for joining us today, guys. We'll start making the rounds where each of us have a few minutes to discuss what's been happening at our clubs this week. We'll start with you, Louis. You got a good win on Friday night against Birmingham. Talk us through the week at Wednesday.
So like you say, we won 3-0 that night on Friday, just gone. Decent performance, was at home. It was good to see, obviously, under the lights at Hillsborough again. We've played a few away games over the last month. Can't complain, a 3-0 victory. We were the better team. I don't think the scoreline reflected the game, to be honest. Birmingham had a good period, a good 40-minute period where they could have scored a few goals. They did hit the post three times, although once that was off Sam Hutchinson's shoulder, I believe. But for me, Birmingham just seemed to lack the confidence in the final third. Like I say, they did have a bit of run of play. We took our chances. We scored at right time, like Rhodes scored early on. And then obviously when they were coming at us, we scored another goal through Winall. And we just seem to have that touch of class now. Like I say, I've mentioned Rhodes and Winall already, but they seem to look decent up front as a pairing. Another great thing, and I know I mention it on the podcast all the time, but another clean sheet for Wednesday. I mean, you can't complain defensively again. That's 458 minutes since we've actually conceded a goal at Hillsborough, which is phenomenal in this league, really, in the Championship. Our home form, again, it's been key, and that's what's keeping us in the playoff spots at the minute, winning again at Hillsborough. So we've actually got, with 16 games remaining, we've got 9 at home. So we're hoping that's going to give us that push where we can, I think obviously top two is out of our reach now, but you know, we keep going and find that form before we do get in the playoffs, if we make it, hopefully. But for me, regarding the game, debut performances by Fox, Winall and Rhodes were all absolutely outstanding. Other than probably Sam Hutchinson, I'd say they were the three better players on the pitch on the evening. It was good to see, obviously, Rhodes and Winall both score. Rhodes celebrated with his dad, which was good to see. It's nice to have a bit of passion when scoring and celebrating with his father, obviously. And that's something what a lot of clubs miss, is just that little bit of, passion and drive in relation to, being family orientated club. So that was definitely good to see.
Yeah, you've spoken a lot about how you needed strikers before the January transfer window, and you've obviously got two in. Do you think they're going to help you sort of stabilise your position in the top six? Because you have only lost twice since the 5th of November in the league. So, I mean, it's not, you're very difficult to beat. It just seems that getting those goals to win games were the problem. Do you think it's solved now?
Yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, there were an issue that we had previous to, like, say, Christmas. And like you say, we brought in Rhodes and Winall. We've also, I know I keep mentioning it, but we've got Fletcher, Hooper, Forestieri now. So goals shouldn't be an issue, you know, going forward. So it was definitely nice to see them both score on their home debuts as such. And I know previously we've discussed about how they're all going to fit into the squad. Well, I've been thinking about this question for a while, and the good thing is, in a game, you think of the first 11, but obviously 14 players can play on a night, and if one of them is not performing, is going to be forced to make a change. And I'm guessing Forestier is going to find himself more out on the left, and then you've got four strikers there where we're going to be fighting for, you know, a position in the starting 11, and Rhodes is probably the main one who will be finding him playing every game. And then obviously there's three others where they're going to be fighting for that position. So yeah, goals from now on shouldn't be an issue. But going back to Friday night when we played Birmingham, you could definitely see that with Rhodes and Winall, it was just that extra little cutting edge and touch of class what actually saw us win 3-0. Because on another day, you know, without the strikers and that quality, it'd have probably have been, you know, we may have won, but it could have been a 0-0, 1-1 draw. So that, you know, that £10 million as such, what chance here he's gone and put his hand in his pocket, that's certainly made the difference. And that can be the difference in a game where on another day you don't win, but, you know, one opportunity or two opportunities to find the back of the net. So I certainly see us finishing in the playoffs now. Well, I'm still hopeful of that, but, you know, with the players we've brought in, it should not be a problem going forward.
Talking about the playoffs, we'll move on to Derby now. A disappointing draw to Bristol City, despite going 3-0 down. You got it back, but I guess it's a fixture you'd have been looking to win, Andy. What were your thoughts on the week at Derby? Because you obviously had two games with the FA Cup replay as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, starting off with the Cup replay at Leicester, I was a little bit disappointed, actually. Not just going out, but the fact was that Ranieri had indicated he was going to make a lot of changes to the Leicester side. So obviously that indicated a weakened side. So do we capitalise on that and put out a full strength team? No, we don't. Steve McLaren himself decides to make 8 changes to the team. I thought the game itself, Leicester deservedly ahead in the first half. We were pretty poor. It was a scrappy game, to be quite honest, up to that point. Second half, he came into it a bit more. Fortunate to get a goal, a deflected free kick from Abdul Kamara, and neither side could really snatch the all-important winning goal. So we went into extra time, and in extra time we just simply ran out of steam, and we were beaten by 2 quality goals, and there were quality, no two ways about them. Very impressed by Damari Gray, the way he took his goal, which basically wrapped things up for them. So we got on to yesterday, back at home, concentrating on the league business. Bristol City, a team which went on an 8-match run without a win recently. Obviously, earlier this season, they lost their star man in Jonathan Codger. They came to us, and in the first half, they absolutely spanked us. It was all Bristol City, 3-0, could have been 5-0 at half-time. And, well, in fact, during the first half, McLaren recognised the problems out there. We made 2 substitutions just after the half-hour mark, which is pretty embarrassing when you're playing a struggling side. Anyway, we come out for the second half, much, much better. It was Tom Ince and Darren Bent to the rescue. Bent with a flying header. Ince with a header. I've never seen him score a header for Derby before. Bristol City then had a few chances themselves to wrap the game up. Matty Taylor missing a sitter. Then right near the end, we got a penalty. Tom Ince fouled in the box. And Darren Bent just squeezing it in to snatch the point. But overall, it's very disappointing. You know, we've got one or two games coming up with teams that are around us, but we've also got a few games of the teams near the bottom, and I know they're fighting for their lives. But despite that, if you've got any ambitions to be in that top 6 at the end of the season, you've got to be beating the Bristol Cities. And, you know, very, very disappointed, although I was pleased to see the character off the side in the second half to come from 3 goals down.
Yeah, you mentioned there the positives that you can take from the game. I've got your fixtures in front of me now, and in your next 12 matches, you're only going to face one team that is currently above you in the table. So, I mean, there's an opportunity for you to go on a run and push into those playoff places. Do you think that the next sort of 12 games are going to be vital? Well, maybe even the next four. You've got Cardiff, Burton, Aston Villa and Blackburn. You know, if you take nine or more points out of those four, then you'll put yourself in a great position.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are some games, you know, there's a load of games coming up with teams below us. But if you look at them all individually, you know, Cardiff under Warnock are never to be underestimated. Aston Villa are underperforming. They've got to be getting wins at some time. The amount of money, 60-odd million pounds they've spent. Burton Albion are coming up very soon. They're fighting for the lives. I'm sure Nigel Clough's going to be wanting to put one over on us. Blackburn Rovers beat us at Pride Park earlier this season. You know, it's that old saying, there's no easy games in this league, but we have got to get out there. We've got to do the business against these teams. And at the minute, there's a slight doubt, certainly from me, it's if we have got the strength of character to go on one of these runs. Hopefully, you know, these fears are going to be unfounded. But, you know, those old signs were showing it there and again against Bristol City, that when it comes to the home straight, we're not going to make it over the finishing line before, you know, there's going to be six other teams over it before us.
Yeah, it's interesting hearing the different views from both of you, because there's only 5.7 from the in the table, one goal on the goal difference, and you've played the same amount of matches. So, I mean, it's not too much in it, and there's plenty of football to go. So I think both of you have sort of similar chances of getting to the playoffs. Maybe Wednesday a little bit more advanced, but, I mean, it's not too much difference from where I'm sitting. But we'll come on to Newcastle now. So I'm a lot more sort of happy with how things are going after sort of a tricky period around Christmas and New Year. We've won our last two in the league, and you know, we've picked up, I think it's 13 out of 5 matches now. So we've moved ahead of Brighton. The gap between us and Huddersfield in the third place is now 7 points. So it's a healthy gap, and one that we should look to extend over the coming weeks. We've got some tricky fixtures, but we are the best, you know, we're currently the best team in the league, and we shouldn't be fearful of any teams in the league. I mean, we've seen with Blackburn and Wolves before that teams can beat us, but we shouldn't be overly fearful at this stage. We've got enough experience and, you know, a manager that knows what he's doing. So I think we've got enough to get over the line, and hopefully we can sort of separate from Brighton as well over the next few weeks. But talking about yesterday's game, it was sort of typical of many of our away performances this season. We didn't play overly well. We weren't that good. I think it was quite a physical game. There weren't many chances for either side. But, you know, we took our chance when it came. There was a hint of offside with the goal where, you know, on another day that would have been given offside. But we you know, we took our chance. We went 1-0 up. And I think as soon as we went 1-0 up, the Wolves were never going to come back into the game. It's the same as the Derby match last week. I did, although Derby pushed at the end, I wasn't that worried about conceding an equaliser, because under Benitez we sort of had that experience of holding games out against QPR a few weeks ago. We didn't manage to do so, but that was due to an own goal, a little bit of miscommunication rather than our defence being cut open. We're very solid, we know what we're doing, and you know, it's really good to watch. It's not as entertaining as it was in the last Championship season, where we were maybe winning matches a bit more comfortably, but you know, we're getting the job done and we're top of the league. And it's at the moment, it's that sort of awkward period between Christmas and the run-in, and it's maybe not seen as important as either period, but it's important to keep picking up wins. And I think yesterday was the type of win that you pick up if you are going to go and win the league. Mitrovic got the goal. He's not been that good recently. He could have maybe got sent off before he scored, which wouldn't be a surprise to people who watch him regularly, because he is that type of player. He got taken off at halftime, so I mean, he got his goal, but he's still not impressing that much. And I think Dwight Gale should be back for the game on Tuesday night, so it'll be interesting to see him come back in, and hopefully he can push on from where he is at the moment on 20 goals, because we have missed him, and it'd be great to see him back. But we will move into the topics for today now. I just want to ask each of you about your manager and sort of their, how they set up the team and their tactics and substitutions, because each manager is obviously different in this respect. And do you think that your manager has it right at the moment? I know, Andy, you've talked about the 4-3-3 and the players not maybe fitting the system as well as they have in the past on the McLaren. So I just want to know what you'd maybe like to see them do differently, and what your thoughts are on how they set the team up and manage the team sort of on the pitch. So we'll start with you on this, Andy, as I've sort of mentioned it there. What are your thoughts on McLaren and how he sort of changed things since he's come in? And is there anything you'd like to see him do a little bit differently?
Well, I mean, the reason the 4-3-3 isn't working as well as last time, I can give you one name, Chris Martin, who Nigel Pearson decided in his wisdom to let go on a season loan to Fulham. And to me, because of how Steve McLaren has tried to bring Chris Martin back early, just to me demonstrates how one-dimensional he is, because that style of play, Chris Martin does all the hold-up play, chips in with goals and that, and it's as if there's no other player anywhere that can play in that role. And, you know, to me, a good manager can play more than one formation. You know, 4-3-3, it's all very well, it's very pretty when things are going well, but there are certain types of manager that look at that, and if they think it's going to be a problem, we'll just park the bus, time waste, you know, play the negative football. And it's effective when these managers get it right. What we would like to see, because we've got an £8 million striker who couldn't even get on the bench yesterday, what I would like to see in the summer is a bit of planning ahead. Come on, let's get two or three signings that can allow us to play in an alternative formation. You know, a 4-4-2. We have flirted with 4-2-3-1, but we are stuck on 4-3-3. And whilst we're playing that formation, there's some players at the club that are disenfranchised. You cannot play Matty Vidra as a lone striker. If you've got the players that allow you to play a 4-4-2, you know, we wouldn't necessarily have to bring a striker in, because Chris Martin's coming back next season anyway. So a couple of beefy midfielders and a natural wide man, you know, that could do the trick. But, you know, but it's all too one-dimensional, too predictable. And, you know, we need a bigger bag of tricks than what we've got at the moment.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, I just want to ask you a question about the substitutions as well. You mentioned yesterday McLaren changed it early. Do you think that he uses his bench as well as he can do, or is he maybe too slow, or makes the changes at the wrong times?
Well, I think because we haven't got the firepower up front that we did have under him previously, he's been a little bit more conservative about his substitutions. During his first spell, if we were needing a goal, he would throw attacking players on. He would trust the defence to do its job. But now, we're getting to a stage where if we're leading in a game, it's playing a little bit more defensively. I mean, against Reading, when the game was, it was at the 3-2, and Reading were pushing, trying to, you know, get an equaliser, we had six defenders on the field. So I think it's a knock-on effect of not being as lethal in front of goal. Don't forget, a couple of seasons ago, we were the division's top scorers. Is added a bit more to the pressure, you know, as you go down the other side of the pitch. And his substitutions are not quite the same as what they were then, if you catch my drift.
And moving on to Wednesday with you now, Louis. For me as a neutral, I see Wednesday as sort of a team that sets up 4-4-2 with two solid banks of four that are very well organised. Is that sort of how you play most of the time? Or as Carvajal, does he ever change it up and try different things? What are your thoughts on how he sort of manages the tactical side of the game?
Yeah, you're completely right. We always typically set up in a 4-4-2 formation. Obviously, we two up top. Depends who's going to play up on the left wing. You've got Reach or Forestieri. I expect them both to fight for a position now on the left. People have been crying out for Forestieri because that's where he was most lethal last season, from the left rather than up top. But obviously with the strikers that we've got now, bringing two in January, I'm sure that's where he'll find his place. And then the guys up front are going to, like I mentioned earlier, fight between themselves. I mean, at the minute, what he typically does is, if things aren't quite going our way, he will replace Wallace with McManaman to give us that extra attacking threat where possible. We've also got Jones, if need be, to slot in if Hutchinson's suspended or injured. And we've also normally got Lee, but he's out injured, and then Bani or Abdi in midfield, who again will be fighting for their places. But like you say, we play 4-4-2. To be critical, the problem we've got is we sometimes, when we fall behind or go 1-0 down, we don't tend to always have a plan B, especially away from home. When we're playing at home and we're 1-0 up and etc., and we're playing attacking, free-flowing football, it's all being well. But sometimes, like I say, when we find ourselves 1-0 down, I'm not sure if he knows what is best formation or how to change a game. We have got the players now. Like I say, we've bought some decent players in January. But for me, we're better than that now. We need to find a plan B. When we've come up against teams that have been very gritty and determined in midfield, like big central midfielders, we can be slightly bossed in midfield sometimes, especially with Bannon in the middle of the park, who's obviously a small player. And then a good example is when we played Leeds at home, like we were creating chances, but in midfield they bossed us a little. And the only time that I've seen us actually play a dogged, determined, gritty performance is when we played Newcastle away, actually, Jake. And you know, we went there and we kicked you around a little and came away with the points. Normally we set up to just play the, like I say, free-flowing football, and look at playing attacking football and go 1-0 up. But like I say, if we were to go 1-0 down at any point, it seems like he just needs to find a plan B. And I'm hoping, with the players we've brought in, we've got such as McManaman, Abdi, Hooper, Fletcher, players like that to bring on now and hopefully change a game. But it's something where it's just been a little underlying problem, like I say, when we've gone behind in games.
Yeah, one thing I'd like to mention about Carvajal, from how I see him, is that he seems to be very good at setting up for big matches. He seems to be good at sort of getting his teams well organised and knowing exactly how to play to get a result. And it maybe be against the smaller teams that he struggles somewhat. I mean, this season against Newcastle, you mentioned that game, you were very well set up and you deservedly got the points. Huddersfield is another example. And even in the Brighton game, I thought you did okay. I mean, you didn't, you know, get the win that day, but it wasn't awful. And if you'd scored the penalty, it would have been completely different. So, I mean, there's a lot of room to be optimistic, especially with the playoffs seeming like your most likely destination. And last year he showed it against Brighton over two legs. He did excellently in that as well. So do you think that his sort of, the way he sets up for big matches, is that one of his strengths?
It is, but you could also say it isn't, because I think what he sets up is the exact same way for big matches as he does for a match, like you say, against a team lower in the league. Now, the reason I think you mentioned that we probably struggle against the teams lower in the league is because they've got respect for us now, whereas teams last season probably didn't, and we were playing, like I say, attacking football, going on and winning games. This season, when we play such as Newcastle, Brighton, you know, teams in and around us like Leeds and Huddersfield, they're going out to get the 3 points also, and they probably feel that they can beat us. And that's probably why we're doing slightly better against them teams this season, is because we've got that talent now and we can come away with the points. Whereas a team probably, like you say, in the bottom half of the league, they're probably looking more for, not to concede. Like, they're probably looking to get a 0-0 draw, especially if it's at Hillsborough, or 1-1 draw. And they're parking the bus a little. So we're probably finding it harder to play. So that's in relation to what we said earlier. Regarding a plan B, I think that's where we're struggling a little. We're setting up in the same way, but because teams are respecting us now, we're struggling to probably break them down, and it's more of a gritty performance where we're winning against, like we did against Rotherham and Wigan. We're winning 1-0 as opposed to, you know, going and free-flow football where we're winning 3-4-0. It's just because the parking the bus is such, and they're definitely harder to break down. But against the teams like I say, Newcastle, Huddersfield, Leeds, we're having a bit more success because they're probably a bit more open at the back because they're wanting to go and win a game. So I hope that makes sense. But like I say, it's a case that we're probably setting up in the same way, 4-4-2 formation, and once it gets to half-time and 60 minutes, that's when we're making them changes depending on how the game's going.
It's interesting you say that. I feel somewhat similar about Newcastle and the way Benitez sets up. We always set up in a 4-2-3-1 formation with the two inside forwards sort of on the wings on their wrong foot, so they can come in with Richie on the right and Gouffran on the left, giving sort of the fullbacks the opportunity to push up. But the problem with that, with the players that we have, is that Yedlin is quite happy to go forward and go beyond Richie, whereas on the other side, Dummett doesn't really do that, and that leads to a lot of our attacks being focused down the right. It makes us somewhat predictable. I think Steve McLaren mentioned it after the Newcastle game. He said that they were targeting Yedlin because he goes forward more, and it seems like the right side of our defence is the place that other teams are going to target, purely because we're not that balanced at the moment with the players we have in those positions. But it's size what Benitez is doing. It's a formation he's been married to throughout his whole career, the 4-2-3-1. He used it at Liverpool, Real Madrid, Napoli. He's not really one that's going to change it up too much. He's gone three at the back a couple of times this season, mainly when he was forced to do so. We did it at Brentford and we managed to get the late winner, although it wasn't working that well and we sort of struggled through. I think we even did it against Derby last week. We went back to three at the back at the end just to hold it out, but I just think we're a little bit unbalanced at the moment, and teams can see where they can attack us, and that's something that needs to be corrected if we did go after the Premier League, because there's more quality in the league, and against the bigger teams, they probably find us out a bit too quickly. An interesting thing I've found with Benitez this year is that in the past, he's been known to using sort of big forwards, leading the line. He had Higuain at Napoli. Torres, I guess, is a little bit different. He's more of a complete player, but he had him at Liverpool. And that's why I thought Mitrovic would be sort of our biggest striker this season and the first choice. But instead, he's gone with Gale. He's a bit quicker, a bit smaller. He's not really a Benitez type of player, but maybe he's seen what the Championship is like, a little slower defences and things like that. And he thought that a player like Gale would be much more effective in this league, and it'll be interesting to see if he thinks that's the case next season. But yeah, it's difficult to criticise, but as I say, I think we are a little bit unbalanced with the players we have in the positions, especially at fullback. I think Dummett is a very good defender. He always works hard and does his all for the team, but at the same time, he's not great going forward, and it leaves us a little bit open on the right-hand side just because Yedlin's going forward. You know, we can't... It is a bit of a concern how reliant we are on the right-hand side, but as I say, we are top of the league. I can't really complain too much. So just moving on to player watch now. We'll start with you, Louis, on this one. Talk to us about a player that has played well and disappointed for Wednesday this week. I mean, it might be just difficult to pick a player that disappointed, but if you want to pick a player for Birmingham that maybe underwhelmed you from what you expected as well, that is fine.
Well, Sam Hutchinson picked up the Sky Sports Man of the Match, and, you know, all my hands up. Yeah, he had a fantastic game. But I'm going to go for, personally, I'm going to go for Sam Winnall. Rhodes had a decent performance also, as did Fox, like I've mentioned, also Bannon did. But I'm going to go for Sam Winnall just because you could see when he scored, the determination and the passion and everything he put in the whole 90 minutes, it meant like the complete world to him. It was interesting to see that. I mean, Jake, you know I'm big on my statistics, but he had 9 shots, 3 on target. He scored 1 goal. He made 2 key passes from 47 touches and 28 passes in total. And for me, he just stood out. He didn't, you know, he had a few chances. Like I say, he had 9 shots and, you know, some of them went wide. But most of them were from his own determination to get to the ball and finding the space and them key areas where he could make a shot or an opportunity for somebody else. And he won 5 key headers as well, which I thought was interesting because, you know, I think as like your Rhodes and your Winnalls are more of a goal scorer, but like his headed goals, he scored the most headed goals in the championship this season, and he did so on Friday. And Hunt's cross was absolutely exquisite for the goal. So that's his 8th headed goal this season. So I'm gonna go with Winnall. Like I say, take nothing away from the performance of Rhodes either, because he had a very similar performance. But we've got, you know, very good all round strikers now who can shoot, pass, and head. But if you saw his celebration, Winnall, like I mentioned, it was just like an absolute relief for him to get on the score sheet, and it did mean the world to him. So it's from a fan's point of view, and I'm sure you'd all agree, that's just the best thing to see on the pitch is just that relief and his determination to actually score, and you know, hope that's the first of many. He scored on his home debut, so you can't ask for more. He's been quiet probably previously in the last 2 games, but the game wasn't probably really set out for him. Regarding disappointing, like you say, it's always difficult to pick a disappointing player once you have won out, gone and won 3-0. But I will pick, even though he never particularly did anything wrong, it was just not his day. But I'll go for Forestieri. I think what happened with Forestieri, he played under Zola at Watford, and he seemed to, as he was trying to get into the game, he seemed to have probably 2 men on him. And like I say, he couldn't get into the game. He didn't have much space. He was getting tackled and pushed around quite a bit. It was, you know, not from lack of effort. But he did hit he smashed a 40-yard shot miles wide, and you could see, obviously, with it being on TV, Carvajal was, you know, not a happy bunny at that point. And he did get subbed for Reach after about 65 minutes, which, you know, he came off and he was having a little grunt to himself and a little moan, asking the question why he'd been subbed. And it, like I say, it wasn't his day. That's all I can put it down to. He's had better days. But also, you know, some fans have been moaning, saying, you know, he should be respecting the manager and coming off. But I look at it that if he is having a moan and a bit of a chunter, that it's because he wants to play. It's his passion. He wants to get on the score sheet. He probably saw it as an opportunity to keep playing and getting on the score sheet in that game, because Reach came on and he obviously bagged the goal. So take nothing away from Forestieri. I'm just going to say him regarding disappointing, just simply because he couldn't get into the game, hence the substitution.
Yeah, quickly before we move on to you, Andy, I just want to ask Louis about Sam Winnall, because I saw the celebration. It seemed like a lot of relief. And I just want to ask about what the Wednesday fans thought of the signing, purely because he came from Barnsley. I've seen a lot of Barnsley fans were sort of disappointed that he moved to another Yorkshire club. And I just wanted to know what your thoughts were on how Wednesday taken to him, and whether there's any more pressure because he came from Barnsley.
It's interesting, because when we were linked with Sam Winnall, I was pleasantly surprised, because we'd also been linked with Rhodes. And when we got Winnall, I thought, well, that means that we're not getting Rhodes, but obviously we've ended up with both. But like you say, with Winnall, he's shown this season, he's come from obviously, like you say, Barnsley, and a team who effectively are overachieving, and he's put himself about and he's got his goals and he's proved himself at championship level. And with him being a young player, I can't express how much I'm pleased that we got him for the amount that we did. Like, I mean, I think we paid about £500,000. And I believe there is potential add-ons as time goes by, you know, whether how many games he plays and goal scores, et cetera, like there usually is. And it may rise to about £1.5-2 million. But for his age and his ability, that it seems, like I say, he's a good header of the ball. He can shoot, he can pass. If he seemed to, like I say, on Friday night, he fit perfectly into our squad. But regarding coming from Barnsley, there was a bit of friction, as you like. But it was obviously from the Barnsley fans. They didn't want him to go. We were pleased to have him. You know, initially we were thinking, is he going to be a bench player, etc. But I think he's going to rotate between all four and five strikers, and they're all going to get game time. And it's one of them headaches, but a headache that you'd be pleased to have, where if they're not performing, they're probably going to get a game. And if they're not performing or they're not scoring goals, then that's when he's going to rotate and bring another player on. And that can only be good for Sheffield Wednesday. So at least we've got that, you know, like I say, headache and an option now from the bench and other players. And Winnell, like I say, is certainly going to fit into this squad. And hopefully he's going to give us that push and take us to the Premier League, dare I say it. So, yeah, definitely pleased to have him, especially at his age and the price that we got him. No problems at all.
Yeah, just coming on to you now, Andy, who played well and disappointed for Derby against Bristol City. I guess you've probably got a lot of candidates for both, probably in different halves as well. So who, what are your thoughts on this one?
For disappointing, the first half, all 11. But no, I mean, to be quite honest, looking at it in the broader context of recent games and that, just over 3 months ago, Cyrus Christie was injured at right back, which we all thought, you know, was a massive blow, because he added good support to Tom Ince when attacking down the right flank. And Chris Baird came in, and a lot of the fans were, you know, not very positive, to say the very least, because Chris Baird, he came in last season, he was appointed captain, but he was chopped. There was a chopping and changing of positions, you know, apart from right back, he'd been played out in the holding midfield role. He played at left back. He didn't have a good time of it. And he became something of a target of the Derby Boo Boys. And it wasn't helped winning one game when he went off. When he was taking a bit of stick from the crowd, he gave him a little gesture. But he's come in. And he's done a good job playing at that right back position. People questioned, although defensively he could match Christie, could he add anything when we're moving forward? Now, he may not put as many balls through to Tom Ince, but they are overall of a better quality. He's got the intelligence of thinking about where he's passing the ball and reading the game. And it's been quite a turnaround. And, you know, I'm delighted to see a good old pro like Chris Baird do that. I mean, he came, pull and pants told me when we first signed him, he's a good lad, he's a good pro. And finally, this season, he's had the chance to prove it. And he has proved, you know, he can play a bit. I will give an honourable mention, though, to a player who I've been on the back of recently, Jacob Butterfield. I've not been convinced by performances. We paid a lot of money for him from Butterfield, but when he came on yesterday, he added an extra gear to the midfield, and he played a very good game indeed, and he supported the attack very well. If you're looking for disappointments, a lot of our fans, ever since the signing of Abdul Kamara last year, have been moaning about he needs to be given a run in the team. It was a Paul Clement signing, yet he didn't play a great amount of games under Paul Clement. I don't think he actually started a game We start this season, he didn't look to be in Nigel Pearson's plans, but he had a couple of good games coming on as substitute. QPR away, superb ball put through in the middle for Tom Ince to tuck away. And he has shown flashes of brilliance. He's got pace, he's got a bit of ball skill, he's got a trick, but his big undoing, he is very, very lightweight. He is easily dispossessed and knocked off the ball, and he hasn't impressed as a starter. He's impressed when he's come on as, if you like, an impact sub, where his speed has been a test on the tired legs in defence, but starting a game yet to do the business. And, I would expect a little bit more than what he is offering at the moment for the £1.5 million or so that we spent on him.
That's interesting, because when he came on against Newcastle, that's sort of the main, the most I've seen of him. But he was very good. He put in two balls, one for Anya and one for Ince. And on another day, you could have got a goal from each of those. So it's a little bit surprising he's not doing as much from the start. But maybe he should just be used as an impact player, because he did seem to have a positive impact on the game when we played last week. So it'd be interesting to see how that one develops. But for Newcastle yesterday, it's difficult to pick somebody that disappointed. I'd probably say Mo Diame, not because he played badly, just because things didn't really go off for him. He's our main sort of creative outlet, I'd say. He's very good at beating players and playing balls in and creating chances, and he didn't really do too much of that. So he was a little bit underwhelming, but at the same time, he worked hard and did his bit. It wasn't like the team carried him or anything. It was just in attack, it didn't really go for him. Impressed, it's difficult to look beyond either Jamal Lascelles or Kieran Clark. I'll go for Jamal Lascelles. He got dropped for the game against Derby. He came on as a late sub, but I think he had a little bit of an injury, but I think that was maybe a bit of a story to say why he was dropped, because it's always odd to drop your captain. But he's come back into the team after some poor games. He was excellent against Derby, got the assist for the goal with a nice flick, was dominant in the air, didn't look like anything was going to beat him all game, so that was really good to see, because it's always difficult for a player of his age to sort of get the captaincy. I know we're a championship club, but we are still a relatively big club in England, and it was a big opportunity for him when he was given it to the captaincy, especially by a manager like Benitez, that sort of faith in him. And it's been a mixed period, I'd say. He's been okay on the pitch. I'd say he's been good for a lot of games, but he's had struggles. He was targeted by QPR a couple of weeks ago and gave the ball up in our own half several times. But he is slowly developing, and I think he's a player that is going to have a big future in the game. Hopefully he'll stay at Newcastle for quite a long time, because it'll be nice to have sort of like an English centre-half as our captain for a while. I quite like him, and it's good to see him come back in after being dropped and give such a good display. I think he got the Sky Sports Man of the Match, and it was well-deserved. But before we wrap up today, I just want to quickly preview our games in the week. We'll start with you, Andy. You've got a home match against Cardiff, who are obviously coming into it after on a relative high after their result at the weekend. What are your thoughts on this one?
Well, Cardiff City, it's us versus Neil Warnock again. We played Cardiff earlier on in the season, obviously under a different manager, and we won quite comfortably. That was just after Nigel Pearson had been suspended. Different kettle of fish this time. The thing is, with Neil Warnock, you can never underestimate his sides, no matter what run of form they're on. He always does his homework. He knows how to target a club's weaknesses and how to exploit them. And, to be honest, he's one of those characters in the game you either love or hate. I actually like Neil Warnock. I've read both his books, and he speaks a lot of sense. You know, he really understands the game, and he understands on how to get the most out of what you got. If you've got restricted funding, he's the sort of manager that can go and get the players to put in that extra 10, 20% that they need to. And we have a bit of history with Neil Warnock. a few seasons ago. 92 minutes had gone. We were beating QPR 2-0, seemed to be cruising to a home 3 points, and within 3 minutes had pulled two goals back. Then we go to last season away at Rotherham, where Neil Warnock had been brought in to keep them up. 3-0 up, you know, going to the latter stages of the game, and you've guessed it, he pulled three goals back. And that's why I'm very, very cautious playing his teams. I'm expecting that we should win the game, but I think it's going to be a really tough game. They're going to make us work for every ball. And, you know, but I'm fancying something like a 2-1 win.
Yeah, and for you, Louis, Sheffield Wednesday got a home match against Blackburn Rovers. Me and Andy will tell you, even though in Blackburn position in the league, they can beat you on their day. What are your thoughts on this one? I'm guessing you're optimistic.
I'm optimistic, but I completely agree with what you just said. It's going to be one of them games, what I've talked about earlier, where I've said Birmingham came at us when we played them on Friday night and we won 3-0. Blackburn, they may try and catch us on the counter-attack. I don't expect us to, you know, win 3-0, but I also, at home, expect us to win in any way, shape or form, and we will be favourites. I know, like you've just said, Blackburn, despite where they are, they have only actually scored two goals less than what we have done this season. Sheffield Wednesday, I think we scored 39 and they've scored 37. So they are actually scoring goals. It's just not, obviously they're conceding them. I think Sam Gallagher and Danny Graham have scored 23 goals between them this season also. So we need to be wary of those. And we have got a good defensive record. Craig Conway is decent on the wing for them also. So like I say, it's going to be very interesting. I expect Wednesday to win. I'm going to go and, you know, stick my neck out and say that Wednesday will win 2-1 on the night, just like Andy predicted for Derby. But it could be, like I say, Blackburn, I'm expecting them to maybe come and play the very, very defensive role and try and catch us on the counter, like a lot of teams do. We're fighting for the lives like Blackburn are. But yeah, I'd take a victory any way, shape or form, like I said. But if I'm putting money on it, I would go with a Wednesday 2-1 win.
And Newcastle have got a trip to Norwich, which is going to be an interesting one. Purely because we've played each other quite a lot in the last few years. And it's always been a game that has a lot of goals in it. Last season, the Premier League at St. James Park, we beat them 6-2. And then at Carrow Road, we lost 3-2. And then earlier in this season, it was 4-3. You know, there's a lot of goals in this game, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I'm not expecting that again, purely because we're a lot better defensively now. And Norwich haven't been scoring as freely as they, you know, were at the start of the season, despite, you know, scoring 5 in their last game. It's going to be difficult. It's got that extra edge for me as a Newcastle fan, purely because the game last season in the Premier League, Benitez was our manager. It was in the last 10 games, and where we were both scrapping to stay up and they got that win, it seemed like it was that result that sent us down. It was after that game that I was completely resigned to getting relegated. So it's a little bit of extra edge there. Hopefully we can go there and get a win and record the double. And for Norwich as well, there's a little bit of sort of revenge purely for the game earlier this season, because they were 3-1 up with about 20 minutes to play, and we managed to get back to 3-2 and then score two goals in injury time. So on another day, if Norwich have closed out that game and got the win, it could be us in seventh and them in first. It seemed like it was that day that the mentality switched for both clubs, where we sort of decided we would go and win this league and that we'd push on, and Norwich really suffered after that game. So it's a lot of mental things going on in this game, but they've been good recently. They've climbed to seventh. A lot of people are talking about them for the playoffs. They've only lost one in our last 8 championship matches, and that came against Rotherham, which seems a bit of an outlier to me. So it'll be interesting. I think we're going to win. I think that they've sold a couple of their good players in January. We've not lost anyone. We're on a high. We're sort of getting to grinding results out and finding our form again. And we're going to have the partnership of Shelby and Gale. And I think we've only lost once when they've started together. So all that coming in, I think we're going to get another away win, and it's going to be another sort of scrappy 1-0 or 2-1. It's not going to be pretty, but I think we'll get the points and sort of keep ourselves at the top of the table. But we are out of time for today, so if you both want to tell people where they can reach you or anything you're involved in, now would be a good time.
Hi, I'm Louis Shackshaft, so you can catch me if you want to tweet me on Twitter. My handle is @LouisShackshaft. I represent Sheffield Wednesday, obviously, on here, the podcast, and I write for Shoot Football. I represent Sheffield Wednesday writing their articles, and I'm also big on Sheffield Wednesday statistics if you want to check those out.
Hi, I'm Andy Buckley-Taylor, representing Derby County on the podcast. My Twitter handle is @BuckTaylor64, and you can find my blog on the various newspaper sites, Derbyshire Times, Belper News, Hucknall Dispatch, Ilkeston Advertiser, amongst others.
And you can get my Twitter @JakeJackman with two N's. I wrote for EPL Index and the Boot Room, mainly about the Premier League, but a little bit on Championship as well. And I just want to thank Andy and Louis again for coming on. I just want to thank you all for listening, and we hope you join us again soon.